How we doing, Joe?
I am chilling, partying like a rock star, my friend. How you doing this day on a lovely, soggy Thursday afternoon?
I'm doing great. I'm pumped up, man. Game two. It's about to be lit. We just heard that Derek White will not be in tonight because he is having his birth of his child.
Yeah, social media was all over that before the mainstream had it. Apparently, Derek told Abby Chin that this could happen after game one. So congratulations to Derek White and his wife on being new parents. That's exciting news.
Exactly, man. I'm happy for him, his firstborn child. I mean, I understand that he has to miss it for a playoff game because, it's your firstborn child. I'm not that really upset, but hopefully we can pull
Here's my thing. Would you be more upset if, like, Jason Tatum, who obviously already has a child in Deuce, obviously it'd probably be a different story if this was Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown or something.
Oh, obviously. I mean, I'd be more upset if, Jason Tatum, JB, or maybe, I don't know, Robert Williams or Al Horford were to,
Oh, we'll get to
miss this.
Horford.
Exactly. So I'm glad it's not one of our, most important guys, but, I'm happy for White, Hopefully we can pull it out without him.
Well, two blowouts in the game ones of the Eastern and Western Conference Finals so far. Our Celtics hung in there until about the second half. Very undermanned. Marcus Smart missed the game against the Heat in game one due to injury. He should play tonight, from what I'm hearing. And then Al Horford frustratingly missed the game due to protocols. Apparently, he was at shoot around earlier in the day. This was a very frustrating and confusing situation. Although it's starting to look hopeful that he's been upgraded to questionable tonight.
Oh,
So
is that
I've
right?
that's what they're saying on NBC Sportsnet as of right now. So it's obviously a fluid situation as we record episode 56 of the Double Play podcast. It's frustrating, Dev. You and I specifically have been affected by the pandemic, for 2+ years of losing gigs and seeing athletes miss games and all these things. Very frustrating to see one of your top five players, Al Horford, who's had an incredible playoff run so far, really balled out against Milwaukee, miss game one, where, the lane was just that much more wide open for Adebayo. And, Miami just, they controlled the pace in the second half, and it really wasn't much of a competitive game from the midway through the third quarter point on, I feel.
I mean, I give the Celtics credit for, making the first half lead, being up 62 to 54 by halftime and having a, okay lead. And then I was thinking maybe, the Celtics can pull out in the second half. Boy, was I wrong about that, man. 39 and 14 to begin the third quarter. Not great to end the third quarter. And giving like Jimmy Buckets Butler 41 points. That can't be
41 he
happening.
dropped, huh? Oof. Yeah, Jimmy Butler is a guy. We've seen him consistently raise his game in the playoffs. And I've been saying this playoff run for the Celtics, Dev, is the revenge tour. We beat the Nets. We beat the Bucks, all teams we've lost to recently in the playoffs. The Heat we lost to in the bubble in 2020 in the Eastern Conference Finals. I feel like that Celtic team could have given LeBron's Lakers a challenging matchup compared to Miami, and they just did not have the matchup for Anthony Davis in that finals. Adebayo was in a little bit over his head. So, the fact that Smart's back is encouraging because there's your number one guy who's gonna obviously check Jimmy Butler.
Oh, obviously. Yep.
So having him back, I expect Jimmy Butler not to put up 40 plus points tonight. I'm not saying he's not, gonna be just completely taken out of the game because he's obviously an elite player, and he raises his game in the play. Expect him to be on his A game. But this Celtic team is known for its defense, and if we're to steal a game in Miami, which I believe we can. Look,
Right.
Devin, we won games in Brooklyn. We won games, multiple games in Brooklyn. Multiple games in Milwaukee, which is not an easy place to play. Asked the Phoenix Suns about that last year. So I feel like this Celtic team is battle-tested. Reminds me a lot of the Bucks team last year and how hardened they were, especially against that Nets series in the second round. No pun intended with Mr. Washed Up James Harden. But I'm excited for game two. You hope that Horford can end up playing, and that certainly could make it a little bit more of a even contest.
Oh, exactly. I've been hearing from Adrian Wojnarowski throughout Monday and Tuesday. He's
Woj
like, oh,
bomb.
Al Horford, he could be probable. He could be out for game two. And
Yeah,
I was
I've heard
hearing.
he could miss two and three. Like, it's kind of been all over the place, the reports on Horford.
Exactly. You know, and I heard about this on EEI. I'm thinking, man, you know, Marcus Smart, like, you know, I heard he was probable for game one. I didn't know that he was fully out until, like, you know, not even an hour before the game started. And then the whole, you know, Woj bomb without Horford. I'm just thinking, man, if we could steal one game, game one in Miami, that would be huge. And that was correct throughout the first half. And then the second half, I mean, here's the thing. You have to give a lot of credit, Joe, to Aaron Nesmith. He had a hell of a game the first game. Minus shooting the threes and defending, he did a great job.
I mean, he's a guy who obviously we didn't have to rely on him all playoffs. Hasn't been in the rotation except for garbage time. So to see him make a contribution is encouraging. Obviously, you know, his teammates support him. And with Derek White out tonight, you'd probably expect him to get some minutes again.
Yeah, him, Peyton Pritchard is going to have more playing time. So I'm excited for this team. I think, you know, and here's the thing. After we have a terrible
game. I don't like
game,
Pritchard's matchup with Hero coming off the bench. They have a good matchup there. Like, I'm not in love with Hero. He did win Sixth Man of the Year. But I think him coming off the bench presents a problem for the Celtics. Especially when you look at, like, Derek White guarding him compared to Peyton Pritchard guarding him. That's a little problematic.
Exactly. And here's the thing. After we lose a game, we always bounce back. So I can't imagine us going 0-2 heading back to Boston on
Saturday. They haven't lost two consecutive playoff games this whole run, I don't believe.
Right, and I believe in the Celtics team, you know. And here's the thing. I appreciate you for sending me the Strike Zone because I heard what you said about the whole
trophy
thing. Oh, you
listened.
Yeah.
I had to put Steve on to, you know. Especially we did it late last night, so I knew it was going to be like a connected these two episodes more than usual with them being so close to each other.
Exactly. Congratulations, episode 69. Congrats.
Oh, yeah. Giggity, giggity. All right. Good views on it this week. Thank you, everyone who's listened so far. It was cool for me and Steve to bang it out. Jazz was busy this week. But as you know, Dev, with our crazy schedules, we're trying to make everything work. So, you know, and June looks like it's going to be an even crazier schedule at AEI.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're excited to make the money. And I'm actually working two Garth Brooks concerts this weekend at Gillette Stadium, too. So things is grinding.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm still going to say this point that you brought up ever since I think it was episode 50 or 45 of the podcast that we had. You know, the Celtics, ever since looking at that trophy during the ceremony, I think that they have something in them. You know, they want something and they need that trophy.
Championship driven.
Yep, exactly. You know, just like you said in the Strike Zone, you know, last night, you know, they weren't going to be like all buddy buddy with KG and be like, oh, congratulations with their banner hanging up. They were looking way past him and saying, hey, we need to look forward to our future. And this is what we need in order to have a great future coming up.
Exactly. You could be revered in this town forever. And that was with them only winning one. I made the points in last night's podcast that, yeah, that Celtic team, just like this Bruins team, and we'll get to the Bruins, they should have won more, that crew with Garnett, Pierce, and Allen. Although they came together late, and, you know, they got the 08 one, obviously. 09, I think they had a good shot until Garnett's knee went down. 2010, Game 7 loss, Perkins gets hurt. It's like we got that close to the second one in Game 7, you know, and then they trade Perkins, and it kind of erodes after that. And Ray Allen leaves, but you knew the window was going to be short with that team, 4 to 5 year window max. With the Celtic team, Dev, currently, you know, Tatum's only 24 years old. Steve and I last night, were excited for the future of the NBA with all these young stars, you know, rising like the cream to the top in these playoffs, and Tatum certainly among them. And, you know, the Celtics are in good shape. Horford's really the only elder statesman on the team.
No, exactly. And here's the thing. You and Steve brought up a great point with saying that, you know, the Celtics need, like, you know, a fourth guy, like a Bradley Beal, like a, maybe like a Donovan Mitchell or like a Danny Green, because we need shooters.
Would fit here. Mitchell and Gobert have, you know, had a fallout, and I expect one of them to be traded in Utah. I feel like more type shooter. Like, we need shooters. Like Robinson Randall. He's not even being used in Miami. Suppose they buy him out. He's a guy I'd be interested in, not at the contract they signed him in, but, you know, if they were to eat some of that money, I'd be curious. You know, he could shoot the ball off the bench. That's what we need, is shooters off the bench. We have the defense, but I feel like we could use a few more sharpshooters.
Right, and I think Steve brought up a great point of trying to get R.J. Barrett from the Knicks. I like that move that he said. I think.
Oh, yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, he's still a highly talented player, being a high draft pick. And you know my conspiracy theory of Zion wanting to run it back with his Duke brothers. And did you hear my addition to the conspiracy theory last night that perhaps Coach K could join the party if that happens?
Yeah, I heard about that, and I was like, ooh, you know, that would be an interesting fact.
From what Coach Wells puts me on the Sunday show, you know, he's got the inside source with all these college coaches. You know, Coach K, he hasn't exactly been just chilling in retirement. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to be comfortable, almost like Brady. You know, where I'm obviously right. A coach, player, two different situations. But, like, with Coach K, he strikes me as the kind of guy who – 2 weeks in his house, he's going to be like, all right, I got to get back to work.
Right. I mean, I can't agree with you.
And he already left Duke. He set up his successor. So he can't just go back and be the coach at Duke again. That'd be criminally wrong.
No, exactly. And he has, like, loads and loads of money right now. So he can basically be hired and, you know, do whatever he wants, basically.
And with the NIL situation and college hoops, like – and Tim Welsh was saying this, a lot of college coaches are getting frustrated. We saw Jay Wright retire abruptly out of nowhere, a legendary college coach with Villanova. These of the NIL, I mean, in principle, it's a good idea to get players paid, but the way it works, get players are gaming the system, and it's this weird transfer portal, and, you know, it's giving coaches fits. Although I will say, Ed Cooley does a good job in cleaning up in that transfer portal. He's got a few bodies this year already.
I don't know. I feel in the next couple of years, maybe PC could win a couple of few championships with Ed Cooley because he deserves.
See, that's why I feel like they're building with Cooley is the kind of program that you saw built with Jay Wright at Villanova, the kind of program that you saw built with Coach K at Duke, with Tom Izzo at Michigan State. That's the kind of program I feel we're building at Providence. And I feel like, you know, we got one of the best coaches in the game, the college coach of the year, well deserved. And, you know, recruiting should be good and the transfer portal should be good. He's a coach that players want to play for. And that's more important than ever in the current college hoops climate.
Right. And I think that he deserves it. And how far we went to in the you know, close to the Final Four last season. I mean, I think we have the team to do it.
Run almost elite.
Exactly. So I think that we have a lot of potential in this team. And, you know, Ed Cooley, he's going to have a lot of potential soon, too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, very much encouraged for the Friars and the Celtics. And I like Coach Udoka. I'm very curious, you know, getting back to the pros, I'm very curious to see how Coach is going to adjust going into game two. One thing about Miami that we don't talk about enough is Eric Spoelstra, one of the best coaches in the game, good at making adjustments, really out-coached Brad Stevens a couple of years ago in the conference finals. So I look forward to Udoka making adjustments. He did a good job in the coaching matchup against Budenhauser in the previous series. Two Popovich alums there from the San Antonio tree. So, very curious to see how Udoka is going to adjust going into game two. Because I feel like, look, all we need to do is steal one on the road, and then we got home court.
Right.
So, who cares that we lost game one? We lost game one at home against the Bucks in that weird 1 o'clock start last month, or what feels like last month with these games being spaced out so much.
Right.
So I have faith that we can bounce back from the game. I mean, there's been teams that have come back from 0-2, even in the finals, you know, so I'm encouraged and I feel Miami's not a juggernaut, you know, like they're not the Warriors of 4 years ago. They're not, a dominant LeBron team. I can make the argument they're not even as good as they were a couple years ago. Butler's a little older. DeRozan, who they signed, you know, he's out. He's not out there. They're missing him. I will say P.J. Tucker, he was a great addition. We saw how clutch he was for the Bucks last year. A guy, you know, like Jay Crowder, defensive specialist. Grant Williams comes to mind with guys like that. I feel like Grant Williams could have a career like those guys, which isn't a bad thing for him. Although I said yesterday his max could be Jimmy Butler. I was feeling real froggy.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. I think that the Celtics will win this series. I mean, I know we're just game two into it, but there's just a little bit of fire and a little bit of heart that this Celtics team has that's not ready to quit. Like, you know, last season we didn't have Jaylen Brown in for the playoffs, and now we almost have everyone healthy except for, you know, Derek White, who will be out. You know, Robert Williams, he had an amazing game one against the Miami Heat. I mean, wow. was that player amazing. And, you know,
we needed it. I mean, he got a lot of rest in the previous series, and with the way it worked out with Horford missing game one, we really relied on him.
Exactly. And, you know, I think with him being probable for game two, which I think he'll be probably fine because, you know, I never knew that he had, like, you know, COVID-like symptoms till, like, you know, not even much, like, Tuesday afternoon when...
Yeah, it was very abrupt, even the announcement. Like, it was a weird situation. It really was.
No, exactly. I was just like, oh, man, Al Horford is just like, you know, who's next? Jaylen Brown, you know, the two J's. Is just
but
like,
you heard that maybe some of the assistant coaches were exposed, and I was thinking maybe they'd even pause the series because that's not fair if, like, multiple players are missing a conference final, multiple games. That's just not right. So I wouldn't have had an issue if they paused it for a couple days. You know, I'm sure Miami fans would have been like, oh, that's not right. If Miami fans even care, I doubt they do.
No, exactly. They'd be like, oh, the Celtics are cheating, whatnot, you know, just having a couple players out. It's just like, dude, we basically don't have a bench if you think about it. All we got is like Tice, you know, we got Derek White, you know, Pritchard, Neesmith. We basically have four players coming off the bench, plus our starting five. Like, we have nine players in total, if you think about it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that's about the norm for a playoff rotation for an NBA team. You usually don't go more than 8-9 deep in the playoffs with your rotation unless you have injuries or foul trouble.
Right, but, you know, tonight we definitely need Al Horford back. Here's the thing. I know he doesn't score much except for, was it game four in Milwaukee, that atrocious great game that he had.
It's not just the scoring. It's the D. I mean, we saw how he took the challenge in defending Giannis. Horford, to me, Devin, he's that veteran that's on a mission to get a ring. You know, like P.J. Brown, when we traded for him in 08, obviously Horford's more of a contributor than P.J. Brown was at that point, similar age. But both are hungry for that ring. Horford won a championship with the Florida Gators in college with Joakim Noah. It was a very good squad. Billy Donovan coached them. One of the more iconic squads in college hoops history of the past couple decades. And, you know, Horford came in with a lot of hype. And, you know, those Atlanta teams, they got close a couple times, then got steamrolled by LeBron, or the Celtics got him. That's how we ended up getting Horford in the first place the first time. You know, he went to Philly thinking that would be a place to chase a ring. All he did was pad his paycheck there. So he knows this is his best chance. He's never going to get another chance like this to win a ring. Very similar to, again, like Marc Gasol on the Toronto Raptors a couple years ago. I like having a hungry veteran who hasn't had a ring in your rotation if you're making a deep playoff run. I think, you know, having a veteran that has that experience, isn't overwhelmed by the moment, isn't going to pull a Chris Paul, and we'll get to our Suns later too. Oh, boy, will we get to our Suns.
Oh, geez. I mean,
that I got things to say about them.
Oh, same here. I mean, here's the thing. The Celtics are going to be pissed. They're going to be upset tonight. They want to come home with a tie. You know, they're not going to expect to be probably 0-2, but here's the thing. I wouldn't be surprised if they come home 0-2. I still have faith in this team if they go down 0-2 because, you know, they're going to be back home. The crowd's going to be pumping up. You know, as long as we don't have Scott Foster's or Tony Brothers, you know, repping the game, we should be fine. But I still have faith in the Celtics team.
Well, we can't worry about the refs. And with Miami, they don't have the superstar. You know, with the refs, it really is the superstars that they cater to when you think about it. So they don't have the superstars like a Giannis or a Kevin Durant. You know, Jimmy Butler is obviously a star, but he's not regarded in that same level that even Tatum is, I feel, at this point. So you hope that the calls go your way. You hope that Tatum is aggressive going to the hoop. You know, try to get out of bio and foul trouble. I don't feel like they have really an abundance of depth behind him for big guys. So if you get out of bio and foul trouble, you know, with Jimmy Buckets, I mean, even if he goes for 40 again, we saw with the Milwaukee series, look, you can't let everybody else kill you also. So we need to contain the bench, contain Hero, you know, contain all their rotation players. Who's that guy who picked up the foul trouble early? Apparently we had him at one point. He's a starter now. Starting two guard.
Oh, I think Max Strus or whatever his
name. Strus, yeah. I didn't know he was a Celtic at one point.
He was. I think we had him like a couple of years ago or a year or two, and then we let him go because, you know.
Yeah, like a G League guy, and now he's a rotation guy for the Heat, starter.
And, of course,
pretty much took Duncan Robinson's Randall spot in the rotation.
And of course, he's balling out for the Heat. So, you know, it's another Brad Stevens, you know, misery index, you know?
But, well, yeah. They can't all be winners. I'm content with the jobs Brad's done with this team this year. So I'm not going to throw too much shade on Brad the GM. Maybe Brad the coach.
I mean, speaking of Grant Williams, what a game seven that he had. A much needed win game seven. What did he hit, like seven threes, if I'm correct?
And that's why, like, you know, a guy like Jimmy Butler, he was a late round pick. He wasn't even in the rotation his first year with the Bulls. He worked his ass off to become an all-star level player. And I can see Grant Williams working his ass off and making a few all-star games. Maybe not regarded on the same level as Jimmy Butler, but Williams, I mean, we thought this guy was just an ancillary piece, Devin. We had him traded at the trade deadline.
Right.
And he has become a vital component to the championship DNA of the Celtics team.
Boy, am I glad that Brad Stevens didn't trade him at the deadline, because if he did, we would have been in a whole lot of trouble right now if it weren't for Grant Williams.
What they did was get players that fit the team better, and Derek White and of course, Theis. You can make the argument that the players we gave up were more talented players, and Enes Kanter and what's his name, Dennis Schroeder. Whatever happened to Dennis Schroeder? Did he get, like, bought out? Does he even have a job at this point?
I don't think so. I think he's jobless right now, if I'm correct.
He's still regretting turning down that $80 million from L.A.
I can't believe that. You know, he turned
down
that.
That's like the anti-IT. Like, IT wanted to get paid, and then, unfortunately, health robbed him of that chance, plus the Celtics, you know, handling of a situation, where he got paid, and then, so opposite end of the spectrum there.
Does IT still have a job? Is he still with the Mavericks?
He's getting like 10-day contracts. I don't know if he's stuck anywhere.
I mean, man, if he was still on the Mavs right now, man, would he be enjoying life right now?
Yeah, the Mavericks down 1-0, but a big dominant Game 7 victory in Phoenix over the defending Western Conference champions. A victory that is still sending shockwaves through the Phoenix Suns organization. There's a lot of a lot of scapegoating. The organization is not taking it well. Little Wayne apparently told Skip Bayless that he thought he saw Monty Williams say to Aiden that Aiden quit on the team. Wow. So it is big problems. And Aiden's a free agent, too. It's big problems right now. And Chris Paul, I mean, the Game 7 narrative returns. Oh.
I mean, I'm saying that James Harden has a curse. I mean, it seems like Chris Paul, he's been cursed with, you
They're
know.
Both cursed in their own way. Like, at least CP had his moment in taking a team to the finals last year. It seems like as far as they'll get at this point, where the conference is getting. And the sick irony is they drafted DeAndre Ayton over Luka. That's the true, like, you know, what's going to get Phoenix feathers all riled up, is you could have had Luka Doncic. Imagine a team with Doncic, Devin Booker, and Chris Paul. Oh, man.
Dude, they'd be having a couple finals right now.
You'd think. Or you probably wouldn't have even need to get Chris Paul if you got Doncic.
No, because, you know, Luka would have been the point guard, and then you would have gotten D-Book right there at the, you know.
Yeah, so Booker. you could have, like, you know, traded for veteran big man. Hell, could have got Al Horford instead of CP3 from Phoenix, from Oklahoma City, and he could be chasing a ring there. So
exactly. So it's like, I don't know if, like, DeAndre Ayton is going to want to stay with the Suns, or if he's going to want to think, maybe I want to go elsewhere this year.
I feel like Giannis demoralized them in the finals last year. Completely took Aiden's lunch money. I think it's one of those situations where he didn't psychologically recover. But also, it feels like there's friction with him and Chris Paul. Well, his stats are actually much better when Chris Paul doesn't play. He's like a 20-10 player when Paul doesn't play, which is odd because usually Paul is very good at fluffing his big guy's stats.
Right. I don't know. It's going to be a very interesting offseason for the NBA. I'm going to say, like, with the whole Gobert situation going down, you know, Donovan Mitchell.
There's a lot of unrest. With the Lakers situation, I think the Bulls could make some crazy moves. I think you're going to see a lot of interesting trades in the offseason, never mind the Brad Beal situation and other players. So
I think Zach LaVine, he could go to the Lakers. Maybe that'll be
interesting. That's what I'm hearing. He's interested. He's wanted to play with LeBron for a while. And, you know, him for Westbrook seems like something that could be done. seems like that's a, you know, a sign and trade that could work.
I mean, man, I mean, I feel bad for Phoenix Suns fan because, you know, I've been saying this ever since episode, I think, 24, that I've been wanting the Celtics and the Suns to play against each other in the finals. And, man, was I wrong about that situation.
They got Celtics Warriors on the table.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's the better situation. I mean, I think we could also face the Mavs, too. I think maybe.
Well, yeah. I mean, and ironically enough, it was the Mavericks who we lost to in that game we keep forever in the Garnett retirement ceremony.
Exactly. So I think, like, you know, no one would have expected the Mavs to be in the Western Conference Finals. I think they would have expected to be, oh, I don't know, maybe Nuggets versus Warriors.
And, Dev, we did our trade deadline show, and we had our winners and losers of the NBA trade deadline. We talked at nauseam about the Brooklyn Philadelphia trade. I feel like the most important trade that happened was that Porzingis trade. It caught my attention. Yep. You know, Dinwiddie wasn't the guy that really moved the needle for me, but I did feel like it was addition by subtraction by removing Porzingis, who him and Luka just never quite vibed on or off the court. So you bring in Dinwiddie, and Dinwiddie all of a sudden found himself in, like, the sixth man role, almost like it was the guy Crawford for the Clippers. You know, he's kind of found himself in that role where he comes in for Luka, and it's like almost like a hockey line change where it's like, all right, you know, you got Dinwiddie going against the second, you know, the backup players, and Dinwiddie's, you know, playing his role very well.
I mean, here's the thing. I didn't really expect Dinwiddie to be this well in his NBA career, but, man, is he proving me and everyone else wrong. Wow, is he a great player. Ever since he was on Brooklyn to Washington.
Yeah, well, we're going to get guys like that, right? That's the tragedy with Brooklyn is you could have just had Durant and Kyrie and had all these players around you. They were a good team before they signed. That's why they signed there to begin with, because that young core with LeVert and Jarrett Allen and Dinwiddie, and now they're all gone.
No, exactly. And like we've been saying before, Joe, you can't really have super teams no more. So
and they're stuck with the most loser player in the NBA in Ben Simmons.
Exactly. You know, I've been saying that ever since the trade deadline trade that something's about to go down because, you know, I don't know why Ben Simmons never really played with Brooklyn, saying that he had back spasms or whatnot, or he was probably afraid to, like, you know.
Ding, ding.
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know. I'm not Ben Simmons' agent, but something seems fishy, Joe, and I don't like it.
You know, I don't understand why he just doesn't retire. Like, to me, if you're a professional athlete, Dev, and I'm very sympathetic to mental health and the sensitivity of mental health in this world.
Right.
But, you know, like, I feel like Ben Simmons hid behind that as a trope. You know, like, when you're an athlete, you got to be able to work through the anxiety. You know, that's what makes the Jordans, the Kobes, the Bradys, you know, what have you, to be able to excel in the most tight, anxiety-ridden moments. That's why Brady's the GOAT. Right. You know, like Ben Simmons, you know, if he can't operate in a tight environment, you know, this isn't the line of work for him.
Exactly. And here's the thing. Philly could have had Jason Tatum, but they wanted Fultz instead.
Well, I mean, that was Danny. I mean, they wanted Fultz, but Danny executed the fleecing on the Sixers to perfection with that trade.
Exactly. And, you know, it seems like this season, this could be the season that Jason Tatum shows that why he was the number three pick in the draft.
Why he was the best player taken in that draft too.
Yeah. I think he's going to prove and show it why that, you know, come the next couple of games. Joe, we're halfway to the championship. We are 50% of the chances away right now as we speak.
We got to win 8 games. That's the key. We've won 8 so far. We got to win 8 more. Obviously, losing game 1 to Miami was a frustrating start. Not having Horford was a frustrating situation also. But going back, and I think we can bounce back. Having Smart will help. And the fact that Horford's trending in the right direction as we record this podcast at 1:30 in the afternoon is encouraging.
Right, and I think by game time, Horford will be ready. I mean, I can't imagine him missing 2 games just because of, you know.
It's all about the weird protocols. We're no reason to go through all the hoops of that again. We've talked about that kind of stuff ad nauseum, but he's got to go past some kind of protocol for it.
Exactly. So, you know, don't worry, Celtics fans. I think we got this one tonight. There's no way we could possibly go down 0-2. But if we do, we got to win the next four games or the next.
Well, they got to be hungry. They got to come out and play angry. You know, this team embarrassed you in the Eastern Conference Finals in the bubble. You ain't in the bubble anymore. Yeah, you want that Boston crowd to be raucous in game three. Well, give them a reason to be raucous in steal game two. And I think, you know, this is going to be the true test of Udoka if he can make the adjustments against Eric Spoelstra, who, again, who's I regard as one of the best coaches of this generation, Eric Spoelstra.
Oh, he is. Hands down. And here's the thing. I know this won't happen, but, you know, I really hate that every time, like, you know, Jason Tatum gets the ball stolen, he either complains about a foul. It's just like, man, stop it. You ain't LeBron James.
There's been never, although I hate that you can challenge fouls now, and that makes it even weirder.
Right.
But, you know, players don't leave that to the coaches, in my opinion. You know, and the fans are going to be the fans. You know, keep it classy, fans. That's all we ask. You know, like they're going to obviously disagree with every call that goes against their team. I try to look at things with like a realistic point of view with my eyes and not my heart when it comes to foul calls and stuff. But like, you know, Tatum, like, you know, one of my friends in wrestling used to say, don't talk about it, be about it. Well, stop, you know, bitching at the refs and talking about it. When he channels that angry face and he just starts dunking on dudes and elevating his game and looking like LeBron or Giannis out there, that's the kind of Tatum I want. Channel your emotions that way. I know, and he's still only 24 years old. Let's keep in mind.
Right.
You know, a lot of 24-year-olds, their emotional stability in this world is questionable, to say the least. I would say, though, that Tatum, he just needs to keep his composure. And look, like you know, you're not playing the refs. You're playing the Heat. You're playing the Bucks. You're playing whatever team's on the opposite side of the court. So worry about that. Worry about having your teammates do what they got to do, making the right plays, and worry about executing the plays and scoring and you know, playing defense. And try not to get yourself in foul trouble. But if you do, it is what it is. Like the bitching and the eye rolls and all that. It's, you know, we all love Tatum, but it's a frustrating element of Tatum's personality that, and Tatum's shown that he can grow, you know, and learn. And I feel like he, you know, he continues to learn on the fly, even with him and Brown kind of figuring it out together, you know, and we talk about the trophy ceremony and other things along the way. You know, it took maturity for Brown and Tatum to figure it out, you know, like, I was saying for about 2 years, Tatum had to be the alpha. I mean, for this team to work, it couldn't be like this power struggle of who's the alpha. I mean, look, Scottie Pippen's one of the greatest players of all time. Top 50, top 75. There's nothing wrong with being Scottie Pippen. It's all about embracing or Chris Middleton or whatever. And we saw the Bucks miss the hell out of Chris Middleton. So, you know, it's all about playing your role. And Brown, I'd like to see him be a little bit more consistent out there. Sometimes I feel like zones out in la la land. He needs to be locked in tonight. You know, when he gets to the arena early, that game two against Milwaukee, got to the arena early and he was dialed in. You know, that's the Brown I want to see.
Right. That's what we need to see from Jaylen and from Jason Tatum tonight. We need to see them, like, you know, not give up. We need to see like a game two of Jaylen Brown tonight against the Bucks, but against Miami Heat.
Exactly. That Brown needs to be a factor. This team, you know, I feel like they are more talented than the Miami Heat. I really do. So they need to show. They need to prove me right tonight. And whether they have Horford or not is what it is. You got to play with the players you got.
Right. I mean, it's just going to be an easy thing. Like, you know, you just got to not back down and try your best. That's all we got to ask of them tonight.
Grind. And don't think that Pat Riley don't want to beat the hell out of Celtics through the team president of the Heat. Just to throw that in. He's never had any love loss for the Boston Celtics. So having that old surly fellow overseeing things, you know, always provides some kind of X factor for Miami, in my opinion.
So who do you got in this series? Who's going to take it all?
I still like the Celtics in seven. I think it goes seven. I like Boston. I haven't wavered off that pick yet. And here's the thing is, like, you know, once we get Horford back, he'll be nice and rested. So that may work in our favor.
I think that's all he needed. Probably was well rested and, you know, just to be like, hey, we need to win the next four games and, you know, we're going to put you out there.
Exactly.
Plain and simple. Plain and simple.
But we saw the Bruins get eliminated at the hands of the Hurricanes the other night, Devin. The Bruins lose in the first round. And it feels like it could be a paradigm shift for the Bruins organization. Just today in Cam Neely's press conference, they didn't exactly give assurance that they were going to bring back Bruce Cassidy. They said they like him, but they want to change certain elements of the coaching, which is a weird statement. They also said they're retaining GM Don Sweeney, which a lot of Bruins fans are up in arms over. I feel like if this Bruins team doesn't have a successful season next year, I don't mean win the championship, but at least be better than this year, then you need to blow it up completely, including Cam Neely and including Don Sweeney. Because I get the feeling Bruce may be out, and maybe with Bergeron potentially retiring, that could be the motivation even more to clean house with Bruce.
Right, because we don't know what's going to happen with Patrice. He said, like, you know, it's either the Bruins or retirement.
That's good. So he does have resonance in Montreal. It's good that he's not considering playing for the Canadiens. And they were terrible this year, so it's not like he'd be playing for a ring over there. He'd more just be playing in his homeland. So if it is the end for Patrice Bergeron, I want to thank him for a remarkable run. You know, again, this Bruins team, they should have had more than one championship. The Game 7 loss to St. Louis.
Yep.
The Game 6 loss to the Blackhawks. Obviously, some other playoff disappointments along the way. The one against the Philadelphia Flyers where they were up 3-0 and lost that series comes to mind also. So, you know, this Bruins team, the Bergeron Bruins, been a hell of a run. And I'd love to see the captain come back for, you know, another season or two. He's 37 years old. He's the epitome of class. I almost feel like he's the anti-Tom Brady, where he doesn't do things for attention. He's truly, you know, proud to be a lifelong Bruin. And I hope that he is being honest and that, you know, it's Bruins or retirement.
No, exactly. He's been one of my favorite Bruin of all time, you know, minus Bobby Orr and Zdeno Chara. But, you know, I feel like if he does do retire, I feel like, you know, Marchand will be the ultimate captain right now, because, you know, with all the fight and, you know, worrisome that he gives teammates.
He's got the A, and that's what needs to stay. I feel like Pasta is the guy you want to elevate.
Really?
But, yeah, but that doesn't mean he earns the C just yet. Also, McAvoy. You mentioned Zdeno Chara. He had the C for years before Bergeron finally got it just a few years ago. See McAvoy getting it. Boston University alum, you know, local guy in his own right, you know, kind of the face of the Bruins, I would say, if I'm looking at the face of the Bruins post-Bergeron, it's probably Pastrnak or McAvoy.
It could be. It'll be a toss-up between those four guys. I mean, I don't know if you give it to Taylor Hall just yet, because it's his what?
Oh, no, you re-signed him, so it'd have to be a trade. I like Taylor Hall, but I felt like he had an underwhelming year this year.
I mean, I think he's going to bounce back next season. You know, I think the Bruins will have a better year, you know, come next season, hopefully, if we do keep up with Bergeron. If not, then I don't know, man. I mean, I like our rookie goalies with Swayman and Swayman and –
And Vladar. Vladar's not a rookie. Or Omar. Omar's not a rookie. They signed him in Buffalo. But no, big game Sway, as Nick Coit calls him. That's what the Mainers call him when he played college over in Maine. He was encouraging. He had some good moments. He had some not so good moments. But he's young. He's learning on the fly. And I'd rather the Bruins, you know, do that than you know, they really hurt themselves by bringing back Tuukka Rask this year. Like that situation was just a complete mess. And I would love to hear who was responsible for that. Whether it was Bruce, whether it was Don Sweeney, whether it was Cameron Neely. I'm very curious to see who okayed bringing back Tukes and bringing Swayman down to Providence when he should have been getting the reps the whole time.
No, exactly. You know, with that situation, we just should have, like, you know, just had, you know, Tuukka Rask retirement and just been done with him instead of – I know it's always great to bring people back, but, you know.
It's almost like the Bruins organization just couldn't say no to Tuukka. Like, Tuukka probably called and was like, all right, my hip's feeling all right. I feel like I've let you guys down over the years. I want to try to go out, you know, respectfully. And it's just, you know, he was washed, clearly.
Right. I would have said, you know, screw that situation. I just would have said, no, we're you know, you gave up on us, you know. I understand that you put your family first, and I understand that family matters, but I would be like, nah, man, you know, you basically quit out on us when, you know, we were down. So
good night show too, Family Matters. Did I do that?
Oh my God, Steve Urkel.
Yeah, yeah, Family Matters.
Did I do that? Hey, Laura.
Did you try any cheese?
Oh my God, great show. But you know, going back to the Bruins, but you know, I don't know. The situation is going to be very keyed up for, you know, most of us Bruins fans. You know, we really want Bergeron back. We really do. But if he chooses retirement, then, you know, we can't do anything.
Hey, he's earned the right. And you know, you'd hate to see him playing with another jersey on, but I'd respect that. To me, again, the short of him pulling up Brian Williams, just watch that documentary last night on TNT or something weird like that, I'll forever respect that guy and what he's done as a Boston Bruin, both on and off the ice.
Right. Right. I mean, he's been a great Bruin. You know, you can't really disrespect or hate him. He hasn't done really anything to make Bruins fans, like, you know, shake their fists and be like, you know, this guy hasn't been doing much. But, you know, he's been the heart and soul of the Bruins. He's been on the team for so long. And, you know, you can't say
me and Jay were in college, you know, I just met in 2007 when Bergeron was just hitting his stride and that Bruins team was just coming into their own as a playoff contender.
Exactly. So, you know, hopefully, you know, with the Bruins, they can, you know, upgrade at probably right wing would be nice. Get some good defenders during free agency and maybe make a couple trades here and there.
It's they never truly replaced Krejci either. So they need to address forwards and centers. That definitely needs to. If you lose Bergeron, you lost Krejci the previous year. That's your two centers you've had for two decades. You need centers.
I mean, with this next matchup coming up with New York versus the Carolina Hurricanes, I think that's going to be a good series.
Oh, yeah. And I kind of like the Rangers. Not that I'm a Rangers fan, but I used to play them back in the day on Wayne Gretzky hockey on N64 when they had Messier and Gretzky. You know, I kind of respect the Rangers in a weird way, the way I kind of respect the Knicks in a weird way. You know, maybe it's the fact that I'm a Yankee fan and I have a weird sympathy for New York.
For some teams.
Not for the Jets, not for the Giants, not for Brooklyn, certainly. But the Knicks and Rangers, it's the MSG thing or something. But, you know, I would love to see the Rangers in the mix. Jay's a big Colorado Avalanche fan, so he's very much excited for the Avalanche having a chance in the Western Conference.
Oh, that's right. And I think it's Florida versus Tampa Bay, and I think Tampa Bay's going to run away with it, to be honest.
Florida's been good. I can't give you a comprehensive report of their roster, but they've been a talented team this year. Them and Carolina have been consistent top teams all year. So the fact that they both made it to the second round, you know, they earned it with their play on the ice. Two young teams that rose up.
I feel like they
beat Carolina a couple years ago in the playoffs. You know, bro, that Carolina team got better. No doubt about it.
It'll be nice to see Tampa Bay versus New York fight for the cup.
Yeah, well, that'd be the Eastern Conference Finals. That would be interesting.
Right. So, you know, it'll be something new instead of seeing the Hurricanes.
Hey, you got to give – I mean, talking about championship DNA, Tampa Bay Lightning just have it. They've been in – they're always there. I would say they're kind of like the modern-day Red Wings, how the Red Wings were just always in the mix in the 90s with Steve Yzerman and those boys. I feel the same way with this Tampa Bay Lightning crew.
Well, I was going to make a resemblance saying that the Tampa Bay Lightning is just like the Golden State Warriors of basically
basketball. I like that, too. It's a good comparison also.
Because, you know, they have Steven Stamkos. That's the only person I know on the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's how much I know about hockey. And, you know, basically Stamkos is like their, you know, Kevin Durant or Steph Curry.
Bergeron, I would say, to put it in hockey terms.
Right. So, you know.
He's more flashy than Bergeron. He's known to be more of a scorer, where Bergeron's more complete player, face-offs, defense.
Right. Exactly. So I feel like the Lightning are going to advance. I mean, I want to say the Panthers can have a shot, but, you know, in game one, they had a 1-0 lead. And then after that, you know, the Lightning scored 4 goals after that. So it's just like, I don't know if this Florida team has what it takes.
No, we shall see. Interesting that two Florida teams playing in the second round, too. It's like a lot of Southern teams this year, which, you know, I feel like hockey's more of a Northern sport, interestingly enough. So. Interesting that it's a good amount of Southern teams in it this year.
I mean, I'm glad that
you have the Edmonton Oilers. So that's a very Northern team.
Right, yo. I'm not saying this like
– And the Calgary Flames. So that's the Canada matchup there.
I mean, I'm happy to see the Hurricanes make it to the second round because, you know, what other team in Carolina really makes it really past the first round, you know? with the Panthers and, you know, whatnot.
Yeah, so. Cam Newton got him in the Super Bowl. Jake Delhomme got him in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. That was a good game back in 03, 04. But, yeah, no, I mean, you know, obviously college hoops territory, and they're known for success for North Carolina and Duke in that area. So,
exactly. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I really don't know who to choose. Do I want the Rangers to go or the Hurricanes? But I think I'm going to go Rangers in probably seven. Rangers in seven for sure.
I never subscribed to the theory of root for the team that beat you. And that guy, Tony D'Angelo, man, did he annoy the hell out of me throughout the series. Just for my annoyance with him as a player, I'd love to see the New York Rangers take them out.
Right, and they deserve it after Alexander Martinez ended their, you know, streak back in 04 with that game-winning goal in the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, there you go. Good reference. Jay would be impressed with that.
I know. I mean,
that's a deep dive hockey reference.
I remember because my best friend in college, Patty, she's a Rangers fan, and we always bring up that memory to haunt her, the Alec Martinez goal.
Oh, there you go. So it's it has a personal meaning with your crew. That's very cool.
Exactly. It's just like, you know, the helmet catch for me is like, you know, the nightmare dream, you know.
We don't speak about that anymore. You know, me and Jay did the Strig Zone right after that, and we had a lot of callers in the college radio circuit. A lot, as you know, Devin, people tend to call more after a loss than a win. It's a weird thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, radio callers, they want to call the vent, but they don't want to call the be happy. They want to call the bitch.
Like, even when trades go down, too, even for the Red Sox, like, you know, not even when freaking Hunter Renfro was traded over to the Milwaukee Brewers, I was heading home and a WEI caller called in and said, oh, watch the Red Sox trade Devers, too. He's the next one to be traded. It's just like, man, you know, this team is, like, on something else. Like, you know, when I heard it, I was like, there's no way in heck that the Red Sox would give away their best third baseman. You can have conspiracy theories about that, but, you know.
A lot of people got Bogarts traded. What do you think about that?
Well, here's the thing. I think Scott Boras is saying that he is shutting down talks about – he's either shutting down or he's either, like, you know, listening in to, like, you know, the Red Sox trying to make a deal for Bogarts, but –
because Bogarts recently said he's open to negotiating. It almost seems like the agent and Bogarts aren't on the same page. Bogarts took a team discount to stay here a couple years ago. He's not going to do that again. You know, signing Trevor Story to the deal, which seems like a slight low ball compared to what Xander could make, also seems borderline offensive considering how Story is underwhelmed and Bogarts has been your best player in the locker room and on the field, really, you know, for this whole current incarnation of the Red Sox team. You know, they're what, 13 games back or whatever in New York. I know they won a couple games this week.
They did.
Had a nice complete game the other day. Was it Pivetta pitched the complete game the other day?
Yep. He had 109 pitches. I produced that game up here in Worcester. So,
oh, there you go. Nice.
And, you know, here's the thing. We took 2 out of 3 from Houston. They were a really hot team coming in, and we took 2 out of 3. And we took 2 out of 3 last weekend to the Rangers. I know they're a sucky team.
It starts with winning series. And right there, you won 2 series. So that's encouraging. Certainly, you have a long way to go. You have some talented teams ahead of you in the New York Yankees who have hit their stride this year, in the Toronto Blue Jays, even Tampa. The problem, I feel, is Chaim Bloom. I mean, has he brought too much Tampa to Boston? You know, is he going to look at it with his robotic brain of like, yeah, we trade Bogarts, we bring up some prospects, and we just keep this recycle going just like they did with the Rays, but it didn't exactly add up to a championship success. You know, it's like Billy Bean with the Oakland Athletics. You know, he got a movie with starring Brad Pitt and everything. What did he really do? The A's didn't win squadouche. Talk about one of the most overrated GMs in history, Billy Bean. Exactly. I get to the first round of the playoffs and lose to the Yankees or Boston with ancillary parts, and I make a movie out of me with Brad Pitt. Oh, please.
I mean, here's the thing. I'll give Chaim Bloom credit, you know, getting a few relief pitchers, but here's the thing. We don't have a certified closer, Joe. We don't have that Keith Falk to come in. We don't have that Koji Uehara.
They need to be certified at a certain point because that guy is off the reservation.
Exactly. I mean,
all-star closer just about a year ago. He was in the All-Star game last year, and something happened in the past year where the second half of last year and then into the season, he is just in his own head, and it is You know, sometimes that happens to baseball player. I remember Chuck Knobloch. I always like to bring that up. He forgot how to throw the ball to second base when he was with the Yankees. You know, he just, like, the mechanics just left him. Like, he just hit this weird rut. You know, baseball players are weird. And when they get in their own head, scary things can happen.
Exactly. Like, here's the thing. We could have used, like, here's the thing. Put Garrett Whitlock back in the bullpen. The Red Sox want to put him as a starting pitcher, but he wasn't, you know, put on the Red Sox to be a pitcher. He was put on here to be a relief pitcher. And, you know, with his outstanding work of last season pitching, like, you know, 2 to 3 innings and, you know, having knockout balls and whatnot and striking people out, that was the Garrett Whitlock we want. Not, you know, the 5-inning pitch, you know, will he do good for a starting pitcher, Whitlock.
Yeah, I mean, you need consistency with the arms you have. I mean, period, end of story. And, you know, when it comes to talent, this Red Sox team, I just wonder if they have enough talent to compete in the American League this year, Devin.
I mean, here's the thing. I was talking to my friend Nick about this last night, saying this, that, you know, here's the thing. We have the next 12 games this upcoming week. We have a 4-game series up against the Mariners. Then we go to Chicago, and then we have the 5-game set against the Baltimore Orioles. If you could at least win 10 out of those 12 games, you'd be right back in the hunt. That's all the Red Sox really need to do. Win the 10 out of the 13 games, 10 out of the 12 games, and they'll be golden. They'll be right back in the hunt. That's all the
Red Sox. I love your optimism, Dev. I love it. You're always so optimistic with Boston teams. That's why we work. I don't know. It's not that Red Sox hate is blinding my, you know, and my I'm all gassed up with the Yankees' success this year. Although I'm certainly happy with the fact that they are succeeding. But I just look at the team and look at how, you know, we talked about all offseason. They didn't do anything besides sign Story last minute. And almost, you know, you look at that and it feels like it was a move just to replace Bogarts.
Right, right. You know, it was like a backup plan, you know? You know how people sometimes have like a backup plan. They're like, ooh, you know, we really need to do this. And here's the thing. Trevor Story, the past couple of games, he hasn't been slumping. So I'm happy about that. He hit his first home run at Fenway Park, you know, not even a couple nights ago. So he's showing what he can do. He's been showing the
work. I mean, haven't baseball teams learned that, like, beware of hitters coming out of Colorado? Their stats may be inflated. Like, it's a cautionary tale, and it's stunning that the Red Sox fell for it.
I mean, at least we paid someone.
I will say this. Story was a guy I was interested in with the Yankees for years, so I'm grateful that, you know, we didn't end up with that contract. And well, as a New York Yankees fan, be interested in if Xander goes to free agency. We know that's probably not going to happen. It'll probably end up like the Mookie situation where they'll get something as opposed to nothing. Here's the difference. Mookie didn't want to be here. Bogarts does. That's what's frustrating for Red Sox fans. I actually give Red Sox fans a lot of credit, Dev, for chanting, please sign Bogarts at these games. They were doing that during the rain delay I did on, I believe, Monday night.
Yep.
You know, so I give Red Sox fans a lot of credit. I don't remember. They were saying on the broadcast, and it's true, I don't remember where you had home fans chanting, please re-sign this guy for any sport. So it shows how much the fans love and appreciate Xander Bogarts. And I feel like they know that Bogarts in his heart wants to be here. And come on, Boston. Like, open up the checkbook. Hey, right, this guy. I mean, this guy's won multiple championships for you. He's been nothing but class for you. He's, you know, Alex Cora's number one soldier on and off the field. You know, why are you screwing with this guy? That's my biggest question. Like, what? Why? Like, I get why Danny didn't want to pay IT. You know, even Mookie, I get that because he did not want to be here. He made that abundantly clear.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. If the Red Sox make Xander Bogarts walk and he signs somewhere else or gets traded somewhere else, I'm going to be really pissed off with this organization because, you know, I know in Boston, Joe, we don't like to pay, you know, people a lot of money. Like, you know that. I know that. Mostly the people here in Boston know that. You know, it's you know, we don't like to pay people. I'm sorry.
You know, I don't think the Celtics and Bruins are like, the Bruins can be cheap, but they'll open up their checkbook from time to time. But like in terms of the Red Sox, especially under Chaim Bloom, you're right. Before that, if anything, they were spending too much money. So I get why they brought in Bloom to manage the finances. And you wonder if they, if John Henry is truly interested in selling the team. It's whispers you hear that are seemingly growing. You know, that maybe this organization wants to be involved with an expansion NBA team in Las Vegas, that I'm hearing rumors about. So, and they have the Liverpool and other situations. So I wonder how all in John Henry and the ownership group are with this Red Sox team at this point.
I mean, I hope they're all in on both Devers and Bogaerts, because if we let those two walk, then we are seriously, me as a Red Sox fan and Red Sox fans out there, we're screwed. If we can't find a really good third baseman, which I know we're probably going to pay Raffy soon, and definitely, and hopefully Bogaerts, I hope we don't leave him like the Mookie situation, because that will be really frustrating as a Red Sox fan, and I really hope that really doesn't happen. But
and even as the Yankee fan, Judge is coming up on free agency. He's balling out in his contract year, so I'm certainly have concerns in Judge getting some big offers from other teams going into the offseason.
Yeah, isn't he leading the league in home runs too or something
like that? Yeah, he's had an incredible year.
I mean, man, your Yankees are on a hot start. I mean, first place in the East.
What I think is more important, though, everybody's talking about the offense, is that Gerrit Cole, seemingly quietly, because it's not getting a lot of, love, has gotten his crap together. And that's what I needed to see as a Yankee fan. He's making too much money to be unraveling like he did last year.
And Gerrit Cole is finally being the Gerrit Cole that you guys have been wanting for the past, what, 6 years or 3 years now?
Oh, no, we signed him in the 2020 offseason, so this is his third year at the Yankees.
So how long do you guys
have? First year was the pandemic season, so hard to look at the pandemic season as a sample size with any team. So kind of last year, I would say, was his true first full year as a Yankee, and he had his struggles. So perhaps he's finally gotten comfortable. It took Stanton a couple years to be comfortable. So.
Exactly, and you're expecting people to struggle, their first couple of years as their, new team, just like, Trevor Story, but, he's been picking up, and same with Gerrit Cole. He's, finding his mark here at Yankee Stadium, which is, good for a Yankee fan.
Oh, yeah, it's been good times in the Passarelli household, let me tell you.
Exactly, and you want to talk about the Patriots schedule that just came out last week?
Yeah, we can react to the schedule if you want. We can do like the Mark and Kitchen thing and run it down if you want.
Exactly. Do you have the schedule in front of you, or do you remember?
Give me a minute. I can bring it up.
Because I agree with Mark and Ben. I think that the Patriots can go 9-8 or 8-9. 8-9 is my limit. 10-7, I think, is going to be at the mark that the Patriots can best record be at.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to the competition in the division, first of all. I'm with Buffalo, with the Jets. Me and Steve both agreed the Jets could be a sleeper team. We did a nice segment on sleeper teams yesterday. So, let's see. This is the complete schedule. We've got the preseason schedule. How about that? We got the Patriots, Giants. That's at Gillette Stadium. That's on a Monday. Gross Monday, July 5th. That's an early preseason game.
Wow.
It says July 20th. There's some weird dates here for preseason. That might be for training camp. All right, here's the I'm going to, invent tickets. Let me get, the true schedule here.
Okay.
Damn Google. When Google turns on you.
Because I know our first game is in Miami.
Yeah, and, all right, here we go. Yeah, that's the all right, yep. Got the preseason game against the Raiders, and then you got the Dolphins on September 11th in Miami. If we need to be better than the Dolphins, we talked about this last year too. If the Patriots want to be in the mix, we need to be better than the Dolphins. Right. No doubt about it. You got the Patriots, Steelers. Steelers are kind of a rebuilding team, so that's a team you need to get a win on. You can't afford to lose to teams like that. And, the Ravens, too, Dev. The Ravens got worse. They lost Hollywood Brown. That's a team you need to win if you want to be in the playoff mix. I'm looking at games that are must-wins. I say we lose to Green Bay, but I think, probably because it's in Green Bay, the fact that they lost Devontae Adams doesn't help their cause. No. Patriots-Lions, that could be a sneaky game. I got the Lions as a team on the rise this year. I think your Browns are going to be a dumpster fire. I think karma is going to catch up with them. I don't like this whole situation with paying a guy who hasn't played in 3 years. I think they're going to be talking about, oh, we want Houston Watson like we want Houston Harden. You know, this guy hasn't played in years. He might even have a feel for the game anymore. And you paid him over $200 million guaranteed, and you're still sitting there playing whatever game you're playing with Baker Mayfield. I really don't like how they've handled the situation this year. I like that they brought in Amari Cooper. So Brown, it could be a challenging game, but I say the Patriots win that. Patriots Bears, that's a winnable game too, Dev. Patriots Bears.
That should be.
Look at the schedule, and there's like games we can win.
Right, like the Lions one should be a win. The Bears one should be a win.
Like a lot of it is these young quarterbacks improving. You know, are the Lions going to improve? Jared Goff is all the motivation in the world. He just saw his old team win the Super Bowl without him. And, you know, they drafted him a wide receiver. They drafted him the best defender in the draft, in my opinion. So I'm intrigued with the Lions being improved. You know, again, the Jets are improved also. And if you want to be in the mix, you got to win the games against the Jets. Well, I'm not sure if that's going to happen. I got a question mark on that game.
I think the only, like, you know, easy win there.
Well, I'm sorry, Jeff. I almost need to see how Zach Wilson looks, you know, before I have my opinion on the Jets this year.
Right, and I've been saying this throughout the whole start of this podcast. I really think that Jonnu Smith is going to have a breakout season for the New England Patriots. You know, we're going to use him a lot more than, you know, we used him last season. And I think this is going to be a turnaround year for Mac Jones, too. I think we're going to see the true, you know, style and play. You know, it seems like every NFL player really loves being around Mac. And, you know, I think he could he be the next possible Tom Brady? I don't know. I'm not putting that up just yet.
It's going to be the year of the Alabama quarterbacks to prove it. With Tua getting Tyreek Hill, with Jalen Hurts getting that heavy artillery in Philadelphia, with A.J. Brown being the cherry on top, and certainly Mac going in his second year with New England.
Right.
Mac would probably feel the least good about because you lost Josh McDaniels, and this whole situation with Joe Judge and Patricia is just a headache, a walking clown show. I don't like it. I feel like Bill is allowing chaos to fester in his coaching staff. I feel like he's getting to the point where age is catching up with him, where personal feelings affect his decisions on and off the field too much, going all the way back to even Malcolm Butler getting benched in the Super Bowl, quite frankly. And, you know, you know, sometimes you got to bring guys in that are smarter than you. And sometimes I feel like Belichick surrounds himself with, you know, to quote CM Punk when he did his famous pipe bomb promo on the WWE when he was still in WWE, with glad-handing yes men. And I feel like Patricia and Judge are almost like the Bruce Pritchard and John Laurinaitis to Vince McMahon to Bill Belichick. And it's like, you know, I almost feel like there was like an operative to keep Josh down. Like that whole situation where Josh passed up on the Colts was weird a couple of years ago. And you see how Josh is, you know, Josh is at that point where he's ready. He's getting former Patriot. He's well, I like what Josh has done. He got a stud in Devontae Adams, and he got a bunch of his guys, whether it was Jakob Johnson, whether it was even Chandler the other Jones. Patriot, Chandler Jones or the other Patriot running back that got Bolden. They got a lot of, like, Patriot flavor there. Like just like when Belichick first came to New England, he brought a lot of the Jets, you know, Mo Lewis and guys like that, and they really helped early on. So it's like, you know, like, you know what you know. Belichick at this point, it's like it would behoove him to bring in the next Sean McVay, to bring in the next Brian Daboll, what's the guy with Cincinnati? Zach Wilson, Zach Taylor, whatever his name is. You know, a guy, a sharp young offensive mind, you know, a young Mike Shanahan type, Kyle Shanahan type, even Mike Shanahan type where he was with San Francisco back in the day. So to me, that, you know, I feel like the only voice in like the coaching staff I really trust is Gerard Mayo.
I think so too. I think, you know, here's the thing, this situation is going to be very interesting. You know, who's going to be our offensive coordinator? Will it be Joe Judge? Could it possibly be maybe Bill Belichick? I've been hearing rumors about.
I mean, like, they say they're going to have a competition. I mean, Coach Welch jokes, they're going to have a spelling bee. All I can think of in my head is, like, the mascot races with the Milwaukee Brewers. Well, I think that's how to settle it.
Right.
Right.
Just have a mascot race on training camp field and have the fans decide.
Or have a fan poll vote or whatever.
Right? I mean, you know, have a Twitter poll. I mean, you know, like, seriously. Like, what is going on with this Patriot team? We've come a long way from having Romeo Crennel and Charlie Weiss and Josh McDaniels and Bill O'Brien, bright young coaches or bright, smart coaches on this coaching staff.
That's why I'm a little bit in fear of this season. I mean, I'm, like, pumped up and I'm excited for the season to start, but I don't know how we're going to do. Like, last season, I knew we was going to do okay. We weren't going to do great, but now this season's, like, you know, crap, you know, pacing back and forth, up and down the rooms. Like, what is this team going to do?
Going through the rest of the schedule, I know we kind of veered off to go on a Patriot rant. Patriots-Vikings, I think that's a winnable game. Yeah. I mean, I think they're going to have trouble stopping Justin Jefferson, but, you know, they changed coaches. They still have Kirk Cousins. There's something about Kirk Cousins that just you don't have faith in him as a quarterback to win big games. But then it gets really tough in December. Patriots-Bills, Patriots-Cardinals, Raiders, Bengals, Dolphins, Bills. So, like, that's where it's like, you know, just like last year, the toughness was in the back end of the schedule. Those are really the tough games. And the Patriots may have a similar year. Maybe they're 8-3, 8-4 going into that stretch. And we're going to see their true toughness and grit, you know, in that last five games there.
It'll be interesting to see how well this season goes. I think we just found out a couple days ago that Malcolm Butler will wear number 4 on the Patriots.
Well, that's cool. You know, it's glad that Malcolm's back. And, you know, number 4 being a fresh start, I like it.
And because he gave us our 4th Lombardi, so that's...
Yeah, exactly. I love it.
I mean, I love that Bill is giving him a second chance because, you know, everyone on EI was talking about the Malcolm Butler sitting during the Super Bowl. And apparently Bill and, you know, Malcolm Butler talked things over and everything's, like, you know, cool and whatnot. So, you know, just like I said, to start off this podcast, you got to give people a second chance. And, you know, we'll see what the hype was with Malcolm Butler and see if he can, you know, stand to his grave.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's just nice that they're able to make peace on that because that's one of those situations where I feel like had they not made peace, people would have been, you know, bitter about it for the next 20 years, just like Brady. So, you know, ironically, they were able to, you know, find peace, and hopefully Butler is a solid contributor. I don't have him being a Pro Bowl or anything anymore, but hopefully he's a solid contributor. If he can make some plays for you, you know, help get the young locker room ready, that's all you could ask for.
I mean, you saw last season when Mac Jones was, like, hugging, like, every one of his Patriots teammates that he was ready to, like, you know, turn things around come this season and, like, you know, be back, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I know Mac's hungry, but I just hope the organization is setting him up for success because, you know, they're asking a lot of this young, soft-spoken young fellow.
Exactly, and here's the thing. I have a lot of trust in him. I believe in him. I think this team is going to do a lot of interesting things, and, you know, people are going to be like, oh, wow, Mac Jones is really that dude. That's what everyone's going to – their slogan's going to be this year. That dude.
Macaroni.
So, I mean, we'll see. I'm excited. I think this Patriots team can go 9-8. 10-7 is the limit I'm going.
You hope if they go 6-11, that's where we got problems. And you consider looking at Belichick at that point if they do have a last place season, go 6-11, 5-12. That's my greatest fear for this Patriot team is, oh, wow, Marcus Suits the other day. I love it. Marcus' outfit from game one. That is bad. I didn't really notice it watching it on the small TV in the studio, but yeah, that's an interesting Miami type of suit.
Yeah, it was like the tweet of the night. Marcus.
Oh, I'm sure Twitter was all intrigued about it.
Exactly, but he ain't going to be wearing that tonight. So hopefully, you know, tonight, Marcus Smart, he will be up and ready and be hungry for the fight.
That's right. I got the Celtics winning game, too. What's the TikTok count at, Dev?
We at 58.5, so we are striving and surviving.
That's right. That's the name of the game in 2022, striving and surviving. Go follow Dev at Dev the Sports Guy. Also, we are very excited to have WEI and our coworker, our good friend Ben Kitchen, coming on soon to a future podcast. Up to Dev for dropping the invite to Kitch, and we're excited to have a man who makes his living working in the podcast world and obviously a big radio personality come on, talk some sports, have fun. That'll be a fun podcast coming up. Yeah, and we thank Ben Kitchen for agreeing to come on. Very exciting news there.
Exactly. We're more than welcome to welcome any of our WEI friends, you know, Nick Coy.
Oh, the door is open. The forbidden door is open here on the Double Play Podcast. No doubt about it.
We welcome all suitors in. If you guys want to join us, you can hit Joe up on Instagram. You can hit me on TikTok. Joe, what's your handle again so everyone can hit you up on the gram?
On the gram or on the Twitter, JoePa_WEEI. You slide in my DMs and of course, check out all our episodes on Anchor and Spotify. We appreciate everybody who's been listening to the podcast. Good views on the Strike Zone podcast, episode 69, giggity, giggity, as we wrap up episode 56 here on the Double Play. Any big plans for the rest of the week, Dev?
Nothing really, other than working a double on Saturday and, you know, seeing you guys and working tonight's game. And
hours is crazy, man. Like you and Laura had to take, like you seen that schedule came in, like, you know, she was wanting me to do afternoon Sox games after all the morning stuff, like where I'm filling in for you in some of those weeks. I'm like, no, I cannot do that.
I know. I feel bad because, you know, I'm going to New York next weekend and then I'm going to my cousin's wedding the weekend after that, so I won't be
on. Oh, you got an active June week coming up, bud?
Yeah, so, you know, I have a very busy week of June, so I was like, oh, man, you know, I really don't want to do this to poor Joe and poor Rob, but, you know, it's life.
Well, Laura's going to step up for some of those, too.
Yeah, I mean, she's been doing the
past. Big ups to Laura for stepping up in that regard. All hands on deck.
Exactly. Yeah, she had me on for both days on the 14th, so I had the message her saying, you kind of put me on for both days. I mean, I can't be at two places at once. You know what I'm saying?
Not yet. I mean, you know, hopefully someday. Well, unless you like astral project yourself, like, but that's going into Doctor Strange territory, which I have not seen yet, so I cannot give the review just yet. But I am excited for Jurassic World Dominion coming out soon, as well as the Bob's Burgers movie. I'm excited for that also.
Oh, yes. Jurassic World, people got to go see it. I mean, it'll be an exciting one.
That's one movie Mark Dondero is going to see. I guarantee it.
Oh, I bet you he is. He's going to love it. He's going to probably tweet about it. He's going to
fire questions about it. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, definitely, man. Ask him away.
That's the way. Swing away, Merrill. But, Dev, awesome stuff as always. Make sure you check us out every Saturday on EEI. Myself producing Scott Cordishi and Nick Coit. Devin producing Mark Dondero and Ben Kitchen. And, of course, starring in the show also and closing it out with Rapid Fire with me in tow asking random Rapid Fire questions each and every week. So we thank Ben and Mark for that opportunity. And, of course, check out Meter and the Coach Sunday mornings also where the DP got you covered with producing the Sunday morning programming.
That's right. Tune in, guys. Hope you guys have a wonderful rest of everyone's day. Go Celtics. And for me, go Red Sox because we need to get that sweep tonight.
I'm rooting for you, buddy. I'm also rooting for my Yankees to still dominate. Have a wonderful night, everybody. And, Dev, I'll talk to you Saturday, bud.
All right, buddy. Have a good one.
We'll talk to you next time. Take care.